Chapter 32. Changes and Challenges. Without the logistics service from Kenya, our medical work would be impossible. We cannot obtain our supplies by any other means. The doctor who was speaking worked at a large intermission medical centre in eastern Zaire, now Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, serving 5 million people. All the medical equipment and medicine they needed, as well as any staff from abroad, came in through Nairobi. Roads from there into Zaire ran the gauntlet of countless armed bands as they crossed war-torn Uganda. When the emergence of AIM Air lessened the need for some of our internal air services in Kenya, we were able to give attention to developing the logistics program from Nairobi, not only into Zaire, but into other adjacent countries too. It was soon in full use. We were carrying many passengers and much freight into Zaire, books and Bibles, drugs and medical supplies, building materials of all sorts, from roofing nails to kitchen sinks, and spare parts for many types of vehicles. All this called for something larger than our single-engine Cessnas. MAF US lent us an 8-seater Aero Commander, together with an experienced pilot. Though still too small, it provided a vital stopgap. American MAF had their own well-developed program throughout Zaire, their bases across the border from East Africa serving many outposts. They were being obliged to divert aircraft from their own programs in Zaire for regular trips to Nairobi to pick up passengers and supplies, so they were keen to be involved in plans for the new supply line. This led our two MAF groups to decide to share in the management of the Kenya program. Joint ventures are not easy, even among Christian groups. For the Nairobi operation, not only staff, but costs, equipment, and spares had to be shared. Who would control the finance? How would decisions be made? How would the management be appointed? To whom would it be responsible? It all took a lot of working out. Our two boards met and agreed on a plan, with a joint steering committee to oversee the new venture. Teething troubles were inevitable. But the manager, appointed from MAF US, came from a business background, and our own staff were able to learn much from him. At the same time, they shared with him their experience and understanding of national churches and missions. The Beech 99 turboprop aircraft, eventually purchased by American MAF for the logistics program, was a miniature airliner, an efficient, sophisticated, two-crew commuter plane, tough enough to work in Africa. It could operate from short airstrips carrying 15 passengers or a ton of freight. It cruised at 220 miles an hour, 50% faster than our single-engined planes. More work could be done each day. Wide loading doors, easily removable seats, and an underside pod made it a good cargo carrier. With full instrument flying facilities and radar, it could maintain a regular schedule, relatively unhampered by bad weather, which could hinder our smaller planes. It fully met the need of the logistics operations for capacity, range, and speed. Peter de Boursier came to Nairobi to set up the flying operations for the Beech. He was the epitome of an RAF Transport Command squadron leader. Tall, precise, and always impeccably dressed. One of the continuing number of our staff with Air Force background. He brought the experience and professionalism vital to the introduction of this more sophisticated aircraft, so different from anything MAF had operated before. American MAF sent turbine-experienced engineers to ensure the mechanical maintenance of the aircraft was of a similar high standard. At that time, the beach was supported by two fast, single-engine Cessna 210s, much smaller, but ideal for long-range flights when fewer passengers needed to be carried. AIM Air planes helped in the link to Zaire too. Max Gove had now acquired 12 years' experience, and he'd held responsible positions, first in Ethiopia and later in Kenya. After the joint venture had been running for a couple of years, he and his family returned to the UK, where he took over as director of overseas operations at our Folkestone headquarters. Max worked well with his MAF US counterpart. After 4 years of the Kenya joint venture, the two of them proposed that it should revert to the total management of MAF UK. They felt the cooperation had served its purpose in establishing a new service which neither of our groups could have achieved so well alone. Their proposal came before our two boards, was thoroughly discussed, and then accepted. MAF Europe later purchased the beach from the Americans. The logistics program grew, bringing Christian workers, healthcare, and relief to the countries around. We had been given a new resource to meet a growing need. Others in MAF were finding new ways of meeting new challenges and opportunities. From the earliest days, we had been dedicated primarily to providing flights which helped others in their endeavours to spread the knowledge of God's love. That, however, had never prevented our staff, without any reduction of or distraction from their central MAF work, from seizing any opportunities to share the good news themselves. Some examples among many stand out in my mind. It's sunset in the African bush. Scrub, thorn bushes and trees have merged into the night. Crickets chirrup. Bats swoop through the still warm air. The local village has gathered. Old and young, men and women, mothers and children. Before them, two bamboo uprights support a large white cloth, tied somewhat precariously with strings. It's a cinema screen. To show a full-length sound colour movie at a remote village in Africa is quite a struggle. Everything has to be flown in. Projector and film, large speakers for the sound, and a heavy petrol-driven generator to supply the electricity. Is it worth the hassle? The MAF pilot, having carefully brushed all the travel dust out of the precision machinery and set it going, monitors it closely. To the African audience, the projector matters little. What holds them is the film it projects. They've never seen a film before. Many have never known the story this one tells. They watch with rapt attention. The Jesus film has been brought to this remote spot so that people familiar with the powers of darkness can learn of the God of love and light. It follows accurately the Gospel of Luke. 5 years of research and filming in Israel went into its making by the Agape organization. Scenes come vividly to life, much in them familiar to this audience: shepherds, sheep, and goats. The languages of the film versions used by our people in East Africa are Swahili and Maasai. Words and pictures bring a clear understanding of who Jesus Christ is. Many realize for the first time the meaning of the crucifixion, that he died to take the punishment of their own wrongdoing, to free them from the power of evil, to bring them into the family of God. Christians find their faith informed and strengthened, their desire to witness to their friends and neighbours increased. MAF staff gladly take it to distant places by plane or by Land Rover, seizing any chances to show it. To them, it's worth the hassle. John Halls, a building worker, had been a drunk. He'd contemplated suicide at the age of 19. Then a Gideon Bible led him, in the words of the flyleaf, to a knowledge of Jesus Christ, hope for the future, peace of mind, and an assurance of eternal life. He eventually became one of the specialist builders we had brought in to help MAF and the missions with construction work in Tanzania. Remembering what the Bible had meant to him, he used his spare time, together with two Christian Tanzanian members of our engineering staff in Dodoma, to make Bibles and scripture portions available to people in the surrounding villages. He bought them from the local branch of the Bible Society and sold them at prices the people could afford. At first, he subsidized the sales himself. Later, some UK supporters shared in this. 50,000 Bibles were distributed in 2 years. Pastors living in outlying villages could seldom otherwise have afforded a Bible or Christian literature. Some received them with tears of joy. Now they had the means to learn and teach much more about their faith. People came in to buy from all around. Many went away singing, the new Bibles on their heads. John had responded to the challenge he'd seen. Marcus Haptetsian was an Eritrean Christian pilot. He came to us in Nairobi 3 years after Peter de Boursier. Marcus had served with distinction in the Ethiopian Air Force for 11 years. When the communists came to power, he was imprisoned. He was never told why. It was probably because of two things. His nationality, the Ethiopian government was at war with Eritrea, and the fact that he was a Christian. Nothing daunted, he had managed to obtain a Bible and share his faith with his fellow prisoners. At this time, he became aware that, in his own phrase, God wanted me to be involved in his work. He and his wife, Zufan, eventually escaped to Germany, where they heard about MAF. In Nairobi, he played a full part in MAF operations. "I am here to serve," he said. When not directly occupied in flying, he worked in a church he had established in Nairobi among Tigrayans and Eritreans who, like himself, had had to flee their own country. "We have church for them in the town," he told me on one of his visits. "They come home here too for Bible studies, especially the young people. There are tremendous needs." Marcos and Zufan made their home a spiritual haven and oasis for many. Stephen Gingori, an electrical and instrument fitter in the Kenyan Air Force in Nairobi, wandered into a Christian rally in the camp's cinema. An old man put a question to the crowd. "If Jesus Christ came now and asked for an account of your life, what kind of account would you give?" The words went home to Stephen. When Christ came back, he would be found empty, with nothing to give or to say. "Tell me what I am to do, Lord," he asked. Once he determined to follow Jesus Christ, he immediately experienced a deep peace and joy. He'd previously been notorious as a hard, rebellious person. 3 weeks later, at a large students' meeting, the expected speaker failed to appear, and Stephen was suddenly called upon to preach. He could only get up and say how his life had been changed. "How many of you would like the peace of mind that I've got?" he asked. So many hands went up that he thought they had misunderstood, so he asked again. The same hands went up. After that, God opened many opportunities to him in churches, schools, colleges, in open-air markets and on the streets to tell people about Jesus Christ. Later, he joined MAF in Kenya at the beginning of the joint venture, and took an increasingly responsible part in aircraft maintenance. But at weekends, he and his wife, Irene, travelled long distances to speak at Christian meetings, where time and time again large numbers of people committed themselves to follow Christ. There were many other examples. Pilots, administrators, and engineers were taking opportunities to show the Jesus film, distribute Bibles, or both. In 1 month, a Dutch pilot showed the film and sold books in 10 different areas to several thousand people. All this in addition to his flying. Our Tanzanian mechanics, Henry Kambenga and Dixon Chusi, were often out preaching at weekends. A Canadian couple started an MAF evangelistic team in Dodoma, using puppets as a means of communication. Presentations were made in Swahili, in schools, the market, the hospital, and out in prisons and villages. They proved very effective. Away in Mali, one of our families loaned to MAFUS was closely involved in sharing God's love with the local people in many ways, including Bible teaching and the provision of greatly needed village wells. MAF ladies were involved in running clinics, helping in women's work, teaching and other church activities. Some men became elders in local churches. Our pilots were more than just pilots. Our engineers, more than engineers. Our administrators and specialists, more than good planners and workers. Now, big changes and new challenges lay ahead for Phyllis and me too. How are you going to cope with stepping out of the chief executive job after all these years, I was asked. And the change is going to mean a lot of adjustments for you, isn't it? By 1985, I'd been in MAF UK for 38 years. For 35 of those, I'd been, with the help of colleagues, coordinating and leading the work. The idea of handing on leadership was not new to me. I'd have been happy to have done so earlier. 12 years before, I'd asked Tom Frank to think of taking over. He'd considered it, but eventually felt called elsewhere. But now, as part of our strategic plan, I'd devised a succession of target dates to phase myself out. First, identify successor for chief executive. Second, 6 months later, work alongside new chief executive designate. Third, new chief executive takes over. Time moved on. The major factors of the plan worked out almost exactly within the anticipated time frame, except for one thing. The identification of my replacement seemed to be delayed. Together with the board, I explored various possibilities without success. Finally, I presented a memo to the board stating simply, I would like to be replaced, at the latest, in 12 months. They set up a search committee. I wrote to other missions, inquiring if they had any suitable candidates. One or two suggestions came from our field staff. I also contacted Charles Wilson, who was retiring as chief executive for ACROSS, the Christian Relief Agency working in the Sudan. As a founding member and vice chairman of ACROSS, I had worked closely with Charles. I was clear that MAF needed a man of deep Christian commitment, able to oversee its increasing management and financial needs. The world's economic picture had changed vastly since our early days. Our recent years of financial crisis had further impressed on me the need for someone who combined sound business experience with a deep understanding of mission. Before coming into mission work, Charles had extensive business and financial experience. His work with ACROSS had furthered his knowledge of Africa and brought him close to the African church, as well as to missions and missionaries of all nationalities. An excellent administrator, he had already developed much experience of fundraising and was highly respected among funding agencies. He knew a lot about development projects in Africa. Where he worked, things happened. He was familiar with MAF and the use of aviation overseas. Our planes had played an important part in the operations of Across. David Cormack, as an advisor to the Across board, and now vice chairman of our own MAF board, also knew Charles well. So did our own senior management, who felt happy about the possibility of his appointment. In March 1986, the board's search committee agreed unanimously that Charles should be offered the job. He took over from me at the beginning of June. Everyone warned me that I'd find the change traumatic. It wasn't. I was enthusiastic about what was happening. Though Charles was only slightly younger than I was, and would be chief executive for only a few years, he had much to give us, much that we needed. I believed this was the right moment and a God-sent opportunity. For ourselves, Phyllis and I felt we'd be entering a new phase in our lives. Max Gove arranged a special party for us. It was more of a celebration than a farewell. Many of those involved at the very beginning of MAF were there. Others sent messages, taking us back 40 years. They remembered the good things we had done and forgot the failures. We felt overwhelmed, but grateful to God for their love and affection. We still had involvement with MAF. Charles and others always made us welcome in the office. So did those who succeeded him. Life remained exciting, both within MAF and with new challenges outside. God had been good to us in every way. The organisation took a leap forward under Charles's leadership, meeting greater challenges than ever before. Chapter 33. The Needs Never End. It was with amazingly light hearts we were able to take a 6-month sabbatical after Charles took over. We visited our daughter and family in Canada, saw many relatives and friends in Southern California. There were lots of reunions, including a very happy time with American MAF. There was no need for the mini office that had dogged our steps on every other leave. We were entirely free to visit and spend time seeking God's leading and blessing on the days ahead. By 1987, I had completed 40 years with MAF, and it felt good to see God's hand as others carried on the work so ably. What were the future years to hold for MAF Europe? Would its main task be to consolidate and extend the services it was already developing in countries like Tanzania? Would we continue to watch and wait for opportunities to return to countries we had served in the past, like the Sudan and Ethiopia? Might we be called upon to enter new areas in Africa or even beyond? That very year, 1987, a new MAF program started in Uganda. Uganda was once called the Pearl of Africa. When we first knew it, with its well-ordered towns, its quiet villages, neat farmsteads, beautiful trees and banana plantations, it had seemed a delightful land. In those earlier days, it had some of the best roads in Africa. Moreover, God had blessed its people with a sustained spiritual revival. It had little need of our services. Since then, what horrors had swept across that beautiful country and its people. Its beauties had been drenched with blood, its tranquility turned to terror. The Pearl of Africa had become a pit of atrocities. Few families were left unscathed during the 15 years of Amin's dictatorship. 1 in 10 Ugandans, princes and paupers alike, met a violent death at the hands of government agents. The economy was devastated, education deteriorated, medical care suffered, and the country was reduced to total chaos. Not until Yoweri Museveni became president in 1986 did the nation edge back towards recovery and stability. But there was still a long way to go. The previously beautiful roads were ruined. Churches, missions, hospitals and aid projects were isolated. Across the north of the country, bandit ambushes were leaving many dead. Vehicles and equipment were being hijacked. Without a plane, much of the badly needed relief and development work was impossible. At this point, church leaders in Uganda asked MAF to become partners in the huge task of rehabilitation. Gad Gasatura, a Ugandan pilot, had been flying with MAF US in Zaire. They lent him to us to establish an office in Uganda's capital, Kampala, and he was soon flying from the international airport at Entebbe. The base there became a hub of communications for churches, Christian work, and aid projects. 2 years later, Gad, already co-pastor in a vibrant Kampala church, also became a member of the Ugandan parliament and left MAF. But the work continued to grow, carried on by other MAF pilots, engineers, administrators, and their families. The flight routes radiating from Entebbe reached the peripheries of the country and beyond. Thousands of southern Sudanese refugees, fleeing from the famine and civil war in their own country, crossed the border into neighbouring Zaire. They were in a pitiful condition, dulled by misery and sickness. Our Uganda-based MAF pilots flew emergency medical teams and urgently needed vaccines to halt epidemics amongst them. Housing, water supplies and dispensaries followed. Now they could start growing food for themselves. Their eyes, instead of showing despair, shone with hope. We were even able to fly doctors over the usually closed borders into southwest Sudan itself to care for those still there. Within Uganda, pastors and evangelists used MAF services to keep in touch with large and otherwise inaccessible areas. Church-based agricultural programs were made possible. Desperately needed AIDS care and control programs were taken much further afield than would otherwise have been feasible. Hospitals were reopened, eye treatment safaris inaugurated, epidemics checked. "We would be hard-pressed to stay if MAF did not come," said one community health doctor. "We would have either to risk our lives trying to make trips to the capital or stay without supplies and achieve very little." Nowhere, up to now, had MAF been so used in rehabilitating a whole country as it had in Uganda.